future work and then wrap it up. So the motivation for this project is really our experience with the earlier MetaScholar series of grant projects. And we found that existing search systems were geared towards web search for the most part and carried a lot of idiom and practices from that space. And it's because of that, it's difficult to use various digital library metadata attributes in search. Right? And you can, but not really in as full a way as we felt we needed after doing these projects and from feedback we got back from users. And this manifests as inflexible organization of results, and kind of you can filter based on some things but not organize based on them, and you might not get other attributes that you want to influence the output and organization of results. There's no real methodical way to get those in the search system. And some of that is this latent quality information that we're going to talk a lot about. And it actually does have some bearing, should have some bearing on ranking an organization. That was our feeling for this. So the goals of the project were to re-examine assumptions about what users want out of digital library and scholarly portals, or search in specific, come up with a theoretical framework that models the search task and the interaction of users with that, use this knowledge to build a useful framework, and then actually evaluate the framework. So we have conducted so far 9 focus groups. These are professors and grad students from humanities and sciences. And so what we use is we showed them mock-ups based on our draft theoretical model, which we came up just from our own past experience. And we asked them seed questions and let them discuss their experiences with MetaSearch. And we actually made existing MetaSearch systems available up on the screen that they could actually show us things and we could show them things. So we got a lot of useful feedback. And we plan to continue the user studies with some more focus group sessions with actually a prototype of QM search and to do usage evaluations. And Virginia Tech is our partner on this project with Emory. And they have an HCI lab, and they're going to be doing actually the evaluations of the performance of the system and how users react to it, and so forth. So the findings, there's a number of, we're still unpacking from the initial focus groups, but some of the findings are that users are receptive to organizing results based on a wide array of metadata attributes, and they really want this. They're receptive to the integration of what we're calling quality indicators. They want to see more interlinkage, which is things like categories, reviews, you know, containment, what's contained in what, you know, in terms of collections or archives. There's wide differences between users and the specific attributes and indicators and notions of quality, the things that they want, but there is some coalescing and grouping based on subcommunities and just kind of affinity in terms of what practices are. Users, they really don't want much upfront complexity, not really a surprise there. However, there is this conflict with, they do want advanced capabilities. They just don't want things thrown at them, you know, coming at them too quickly. They want it to be gradually revealed and be driven by their own inquiry. And they want to know how ranking is done. I think this is kind of a surprise that the assumption has been that just hide all the complexity. But users are starting to get distrustful of that, and they want to know what's going on so they know what the system is making some claim about what quality and or fitness are, and they want to know what the system is doing. And that was a very, very strong finding. And they don't want to be told what items are of high quality, but on the other hand, hints are kind of appreciated. And while that wasn't really said outright as much, you could tell because users would say, well, you know, I don't trust this metric, I don't trust this indicator, but I'd like someone to tell me, you know, hint at what the good things are. So that is what has come out of those focus groups. We've surveyed some noteworthy MetaSearch systems, the web search systems, standard set of those things, things like Amazon's A9, digital library systems like Oyster, or the CIC portal, and countless other systems. And the database, Metasearch system, there's things like JSTOR or LexisNexis and so forth. So some of the things we've learned from that survey of Metasearch systems, Google teaches us that users want speed, simplicity, they want integration of metrics that are collaborative filtering or collaborative filtering-esque, and you kind of do that with a harvest-based architecture. Things like the CIC portal has told us that in the digital library setting, you have this notion of granularity and containment, and you can profitably separate those out and add value for users. Things like JSTOR teach us that attributes like publication are important for filtering and for narrowing searches down. And A9 has taught us that things like source and domain are a useful way to organize results, and you can make a fairly simple, intuitive interface that'll let users manipulate those things fairly easily, and they'll be able to figure it out. So these things I mentioned before we're calling quality indicators. These are attributes that communicate to users what the quality of the digital library resources are. And there's, you know, in terms of what's an indicator and what's just a metadata field, there's really no right answer. And I'm not even sure you could consider it a spectrum. It just matters who the user is and what the task is as to which attributes communicate quality. So we kind of use those to mean the same thing. It's any sort of attribute that you can include really with the records in a search system to enhance really this task of finding what's the most fit or best. So some examples are things like text similarity, hyperlinkage, citation-based metrics, reviews and ratings, activation, which should resonate with library folks, you know, things that have been viewed that are being circulated. Selection, so for example, things that are in your e-reserve system that professors have selected, that says a lot about these resources. This word I made up, vettedness, which is just the extent of how reviewed something is, you know, and what the character of that process is. And then availability, you might not think of this as a quality indicator, but actually in the context of the search task, the things I can get at that are available, well, that's a lot of information and I might really care about that as a user. Things like use rights are actually kind of a new revelation that we're having, is that maybe something's more fit for what I'm doing or more desirable if not only can I download it and just print it, or I can download it and circulate it, or maybe what I want to do is be able to build on it. So this notion of what the usage rights are could be a quality indicator. And then things that, IMS, the IMS consortium has thought of, like the pedagogical difficulty, of course, are useful. So the design conclusions we've gleaned from all of this, all these research activities so far, are that we should generalize filtering and organization across all metadata attributes. We really can't select a subset that we think are just good for filtering, just good for sorting and ranking and so forth, that really you might as well generalize that and let the digital library deployer choose. And the problem we're trying to solve is that other systems kind of, they're hard-coded. You can filter based on this stuff, organize based on this stuff, but you can't really change it unless you maybe deeply hack the system. So we generalize ranking based on any number of quality indicators. And when you look out there, pretty much in the wild, nobody goes above basically two indicators. Even Google just has their text similarity and page rank, which is the social network derived metric, and they just basically combine those two. Lots of tweaking, of course, but that's the schematic of what's going on. So we want to allow mining so that the deployer of a digital library can gather up any of this latent information that they think would be useful for organizing or filtering or sorting records. Not committing to any interfaces, I think, is important, because there's a lot of desire to customize interfaces, and you don't want to hard code the interface because that leads to a lot of reinventing the wheel. Another principle is including defaults for common scenarios. So don't make people customize your system from scratch. To try to model a number of common scenarios and include configurations and templates and all that stuff for those scenarios. And then finally, not reinventing the basic search functionality. So the theoretical framework we came up with to kind of model the whole search task, including the user interface to it. So this notion of dimensions, and it's difficult to convey this stuff because all these terms are terms used elsewhere. So consider this a specific context. But in our context, dimension is a logical facet of organization. And this may not represent at all any graphical notion of dimension. It's any sort of database aspect. So for example, if you go back to like the collection versus item level record, that is a dimension because you are kind of faceting the display based on that element of the data. Each dimension has a key, which takes on a single value for each record, and I'll talk a little bit more about that in a second. There's also this notion of binning, which is along a dimension, you chop it up somehow. So again, one way to chop it up would be collection versus item level. And some of the ways you can bin, we've defined them as trivial, which is you have one big bin, or you fixed, where you chop it into a fixed number of bins, or natural, where every key value is grouped into a bin, every distinct key value. So that would be useful for vocabularies. So keys may be based on what you think of as the normal metadata fields, things coming out of the Dublin core or whatever other your metadata format is. But also it's these quality indicators that I went over a minute ago. And keys can actually combine the two. So you can have things like weighted averages. And something like that must be going on in a Google-like search engine, right, where you're combining text similarity with this kind of social page rank score. And you're fusing them to get one dimension, really. And these things don't need to be numeric. So for example, you could have author names or something and then have a function that takes the first letter of the author name. So you have a group for authors that begin with A and then B and then so forth. And then this whole thing is weakly typed. So it really kind of works well. We're basing this on Lucene, so we're kind of extending that, but more on that in a second. So these quality indicators, they're treated just like metadata fields. That's how they go into the search system, and that's what they look like coming out of the search system in terms of the user interface layer. They come from these things we call analyzers, which are plugins to scan the data, and they do whatever calculations are necessary to come up with a summary value or statistic for that indicator field. And it just kind of augments the metadata record. You have the metadata which comes out of the Dublin core and so forth. Then you have these indicator things that are basically calculated. These analyzers, they take the metadata records plus any necessary auxiliary databases, and that's what they use to generate these quality indicators. And those auxiliary databases could be anything. They could be things like your web server logs, they could be your circulation logs, EasyProxy, your databases in your e-reserve system, and so forth. Just anything that's got this kind of latent information about desirability or quality that you can glean out in a methodical way is fair game for this. So our architecture, I'm not going to go much into this, it's Lucene-based because it's a good search engine that's well supported and it does all the stuff we've come to expect. Here's a diagram of that architecture. So the blue part is Lucene and we haven't touched that basically. It's you drop that in and we're not modifying it. At the top, the QM searcher box, that's really the only part that we've written on top of Lucene that the deployer would not have to touch. So that does this higher level notion of ranking and organizing. Then the lighter yellow boxes, those we're also writing those, but the deployer will probably want to tweak them or customize them or add to them. So those are the output transform, the analyzers. Here I put as example citation, activation, vettedness. And then the things like the indexer and the user interface, you have to know what you want there. And it's going to be based on your collection and your user community, so pretty much that's up to you to provide. But the connection between these is the indexer indexes the records into Lucene. Then there's a pass triggered where the analyzers are gone through sequentially. They pull in this auxiliary data in whatever databases you provide, and they basically they augment the index as a second stage. And then when all those are done, the index is full of not only the normal metadata, but also these quality indicators. So after that, coming out of Lucene, there's the search process. So a search comes in from the user interface, and it requires two things. There's a query, which everybody's used to. There's also something called the organization spec. And that basically tells the system how to organize the results. So the QM Searcher module dispatches the search to Lucene, takes the results, then it processes the org spec against the results, and it augments the data. So it has everything it needs to organize the results in this higher level sense. Then there's some output transform that takes our kind of our specifically defined results XML format, and it we have XSLTs right now, but you could conceivably provide something else to transform that to the user interface. So I'm going to attempt a demo here. Let's see. So here's a very early prototype system we've got working. I'm going to enter. So our content is the history and culture of the American South, and that's what we've been working with throughout all the Metascholar family of projects. So I'm going to try a fairly innocuous query, Delta Blues. Okay. And all right, we're still connected. So, and hold your Snickers about my interface. It's just the basics right now for demonstration purposes. I am not a web designer. But this is called, quote, the CIC portal. So this implements this notion of dividing based on granularity. You have collections and you have individual items. I mean, the thing to notice here, or to realize, is that this is not hard-coded. This is not a hard-coded interface, actually. What is underneath the hood here is the same as what could be underneath a different display. But basically what's here, you have a record on the left for a collection that matches. You have record individual items on the right for this notion of records that are inside collections. And other than that, those are the basics. The right-hand side is kind of what users have come to expect in terms of kind of a Google-esque linear display. And on the very right-hand side, you can see some ranks or scores, as it were. So we can change this display. I'm calling this M9 for Metascholar 9, which is A9-like. And there it is. So these columns correspond to collections. And it's at the top you have a heading which says what the collection is. But the results inside those are just linear results lists, again, which is actually the same thing that was in the right-hand panel on the last screen, except now the results are faceted by collection. And you can see if you scroll down and there are more inside a column, you get a link to view more, which actually doesn't work yet, but someday it will. And another thing to notice here is that some of the headings are hyperlinked, some of them are not. That's because we haven't completely normalized our data at this point. But you get the general idea. And another rendering of the same search in the same system with the same query is something we're calling the Super Google. And this is basically three views of the same result set. And each of these columns has all of the results repeated again. However, the first column is sorted by text similarity. The second one by popularity, which is an indicator with a randomly generated value for demonstration purposes. But that could be gleaned from something like circulation count or holdings counts that you saw in Colleen's presentation. And then the third column is actually a weighted average of both of those. And if you do a mouse over this combined, it actually explains what it is. And there's really, there's no real alchemy there. That's just a span with a title that says what it's doing. But those are basically, so this is kind of what Google's doing three times, except with three different metrics. And conceivably, you could also, instead of showing them all, allow the user to switch between them as they please. And then the final view is really far out there. It's Metascholar 3D. This actually has three dimensions of organization, these logical dimensions. And so we've taken across, we've taken that popularity value, and instead of showing it as a score, we've done a binning based on that. It's binned into four bins that correspond to a range of values. So this one is, you know, 0.7 blah 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 to 1.0. It's the highest range, and then they proceed down from there. And then there's an unknown as well for when the records do not have a value for that key. And then going down, you have collections again. And so across, you have, for example, you know, the first cell is items in Atlanta History Center that have a high popularity, and apparently none of them do. Not surprising, since this is randomly generated. However, for high popularity and American memory, you do have a few records, and we show up to three of them in a cell just for not having too much information overload. And then you have a link if there are more. But so with those four views, and conceivably you could create an unlimited number of views, but these are just a testbed set. So what is really under the hood here? This thing, this link that goes to view profile, that is that shows the thing I mentioned earlier, which is the organization spec, the declaration of how to organize the results. So for this display, this is really all that goes into it. What we have here is three dimensions declared in a nested fashion. For each dimension, we declare a key. Will that work? Thanks. Yeah, thanks. So for each dimension, we have a key declared. And it's, if it comes from the metadata, then it's a metadata and then the key name, and it pulls it out of the metadata. And you can declare a binning. So for a source, it's natural. We make a bin for each distinct source. For popularity, it's fixed. So we say whatever the range of popularity is, chop it into four bins. And that's pretty easy to say. And then finally, is the last dimension is this text similarity, which takes the Lucene score from the results. And it's nested just the way you want the results to be nested in the display. So what does this correspond to in terms of the output? You can actually, this page is not really an interface. This is just an XSLT applied to the XML that the system spits out. So there is actually no CGI here or anything. So if you just go to view source, you can see what's under the hood. It's not nicely indenting it, that's sad. But at the top, it actually returns some basic information about the query. I'll make this a little bit bigger. And then the dimensions come out in a nested fashion. Each dimension is tagged with the name of the dimension from your specification. And then inside each dimension is one or more bins, depending on how you asked for them. And the value of the bin is given so that you can show what things in this bin are, what they correspond to. And then inside each of those, depending on the specification, you have more, you can have more dimensions, again with more bins. And with the record, records are under an item tag, and for each dimension you have a score. And the score is tagged with the name. So here you can see the score dimension is collection, and it spits out the value for this record of the collection, which is the URL to Atlanta History Center. For text similarity, you get a different score, but it's also printed out with the record, and you can do whatever you want with that. And then the metadata is dumped. and so forth. And then it's just more of that following linearly. An empty bin is just a bin with no items, but it can still be logically handled. So we'll proceed on here. So the deployment of this kind of system, what would go into configuring it? You need to come up with some organization specs, at least to start with, so your users can just select them. Or maybe they don't need to select them at all. Maybe you say, okay, you're a student, so you use this organization spec, and professors get this one, and so forth. To do that, you need to figure out the sub-communities that you're serving in your digital library. And then you need to basically encode them in these specifications. And they're pretty short. So the hard part there is figuring out what your sub-communities want. You want to build some custom analyzers, so you have to know what attributes that are indicators users in these sub-communities want the results organized based on. You need to know what's available in your digital library setting, and what you can get, what you can calculate. And we will, of course, provide some basic analyzers, but you may want to go beyond that. And then finally, there's the interface layer. It's up to you to determine what you want it to look like and to take that XML that I showed you and come up with something to transform that to output. It doesn't have to be XSL. However, we will also include the XSL, so you can tweak that if you want, but that is definitely a consideration. So what's left to do in the development within the current scope of the project? Well, we plan to do some advanced search functionality, and something I didn't really demonstrate with the demo is filtering. So the spec actually does include the ability to determine filtering at the org spec level, and that's the thing that goes in with the query. So not only can you say, I want the results organized this way, but you can include a portion that says, I want them chopped this way at the level of what the search engine core selects. So that would be things like saying, for example, well, give me items that are only in this publication or only at this level of popularity or only at this year or this range of years and so forth. And that folds into the model pretty nicely. But of course, that needs to be exposed to the user so that they can do these filtering tasks. I think we can go a little bit beyond what has been done in the past because we've abstracted all of that into this organization spec, and conceivably users could edit that at the advanced level, of course, and then save those actually as custom org specs that they can come back to later. And it probably isn't going to be as complex as it would sound for users, because if you're starting from a sane default or template, then you can kind of tweak that into something more useful with minimal effort and fairly high comprehensibility. So more functions for generating keys, like string munging the author first letter of the name example I gave would be one example. And then more indicators. So more things we can mine out with these analyzers and present, and how can we present them. Future work that may or may not get into the scope of the development on this grant. More complex scoring methods. WenCZ at Virginia Tech has done some work on link fusion, which abstracts this kind of PageRank-esque notion of interconnections and various facets of interconnected data. That kind of could be something a little bit more sophisticated than, say, a weighted average for fusing scores. Doing something about this sparse information problem, Seung-Ho Kim, also at Virginia Tech, has done some work on that, on basically dealing with the sparse information and pulling it in from these disparate sources like logs, figuring out based on what comes back in a search and what users select, which things are desirable and so forth. Then there's this issue of recommending versus organizing, and I guess it was a number of people have shown kind of recommending based services in their OPACs, and that's great stuff. But part of the dynamic of this project is figuring out, well, when do you recommend, when do you filter, when do you organize, which operations should kind of be portable between those different modalities. So that's kind of a philosophical issue that is nevertheless important. And then finally, using the 5S model, which is the streams, scenarios, spaces, and structures, and societies, which they're also building at Virginia Tech. It's the kind of total, complete model for digital libraries, but also rigorous and functional. So the idea is that you can take this, model your tools, model your scenarios, and actually have a machine, you know, an interface where you can graphically design your digital library and outspits something that may actually even work if you're just using existing templates. So the idea is there to make that something that you don't really need to be a super coder to deploy. So in conclusion, the framework, I think it's promising. It works, as you saw in the demo. That was a working system built on Lucene. Right now, as many people are encountering these data sources for the quality information, they are limited. And that's part of what I was saying in the lightning talk yesterday, is that we may need to push to get some of the data we need out of vendors. Likely, this framework could therefore even get more useful in the future as we can pull in more of this data. And we would love people to help try this out and deploy it in their various scenarios. So that's it. Questions? It all made perfect sense. You guys didn't have enough coffee. Okay.
Aaron, you mentioned the sparse information piece that you looked at, you're interested in. Do you envisage that you would have things like logs built into the kind of thing?
Logs, you said? Blogs and, well, both, blogs and logs. One of the things I've been pushing at Virginia Tech is this XML log standard for digital libraries to start to capture some of this user-centric information and things about, you know, sessions and continuity. So I think yes for that, but also blogs. Yeah, I mean, social, that's some great social feedback about which things are useful. So absolutely, and I don't precisely know how you'd integrate that, but I'm sure someone could come up with a great way. So that's if you want to go that way, please do stay connected to us, and we can build something that could be really useful.
So if you want to help you try it out, we send you an email, and when you're ready, you'll let us know.
Yeah, we expect to have a release in the next couple weeks. Not as, you know, convenient as it could be, but that's what we need people to help us work out, those kind of issues. And we'll include like all our templates and analyzers and things we code up. But we also need ideas about, or feedback about what your scenario is and what you'd want to plug into this kind of system. And maybe, you know, probably stretching the boundaries of what it can do so we can figure out what it can and can't do, what it should and should not do. Okay. So yeah, please do email me. I have cards I can give out, or I'm on the registry thing as well. Okay.
CV thing.
So good morning. I am Tigran from Armenia, Yerevan State University. And during my presentation, I will try to draw the situation on open source software, open source movement in Armenia, what we are doing and what ideas we are having. So Armenia is in a list of developing countries or countries with transition economy. So for these countries, there is a big list of such countries. I can say that they are having two similarities. The first one, high level of using illegal copies of commercial software, because you can find them just for $5 or just they can donate you. And an awareness on open source philosophy amongst IT professionals. When we are discussing with them and saying, you know that there is open source movement and so on, oh, they are saying that that's not interesting. Our products are much more powerful, commercial products are much more powerful. And my understanding is that if we will be successful on open source, so this will solve the first problem on using illegal copies in somewhere. Armenia is a member of AFLNet. So AFLNet is standing for Electronic Information for Libraries, and that is an independent foundation that strives to lead, negotiate, support, and advocate for the wide availability of electronic resources by library users in transition and developing countries. Member countries are 51, and these countries are from Africa, Middle East, South Caucasus, Eastern Europe, and South Asia. AFLNet has done one big initiative on open access. They have subscribed all these countries, their member countries. They have done a consortium subscription to high-ranked scientific information resources. And just now, all these countries are having free access to that journals, to that publications. The second big movement which they are planning and they have already started to do, that is open source initiative. And I hope that here they also will be successful. More details about AFLNet you can find under that URL. Now about what is going in Armenia. The first and most is localization. So Armenia, our main language is Armenian language. And our school children, our children, after graduating from a high school, they know perfect Armenian. Russian is a second language. And English now is starting to become a dominant language, but the things are going not so fast. Also, we are having a lot of schools where other European languages are studying instead of English. So after graduating, when they are going to the higher educational institutions or starting their work, they are facing problems when starting to use computers. Especially this is crucial for inhabitants from rural areas where the language education in language is very low. So our first aim is to do a localization to ease the life of this young generation. We are having Open Source Armenia Foundation, and already Open Office version 1 is localized. Mozilla Thunderbird, Mozilla Firefox also we have localized, and Open Office version 2 is in a process of localization. Just here you can see localization of Mozilla. So all menus, all help messages, everything is in Armenian, and it is very easy to change language from Armenian to English or to Russian or to other languages, whichever is translated. So the other could be, as example, Mozilla Thunderbird. Again, totally localized, and these are good alternatives for Microsoft Explorer or Netscape. Another big problem activity is distance learning. Now we are planning to implement learning management systems or virtual learning environments in our universities. And again, our students, our professors must use Arminian interfaces. So we have selected two open source products. That is one, the first one is Moodle, which is already localized, and the second one, Ilias. This is in a process of localization. Greenstone, building and distributing digital library collections, already is localized. And PHP BB, which also will be interesting for our students. And now, very important task we are doing, desktop environment, K desktop environment is in a localization process. Very interesting project on developing open source Armenian English, English Armenian web-based translator, ISMA, is carried out in State Engineering University of Armenia, Department of Artificial Intelligence. Project starting date, year 2002, ending date 2006 will be, and from year 2003, two charitable organizations, Open Society Institute and Eurasia Foundations, became the co-financers of this project. I am participating on alpha testing of the system, some discussions, and I see that it is improving the system from year to another year. So hoping that at the end of this year we'll have enough modest translator. The main supporters, organizations who are doing financial inputs in open source movement in Armenia are Open Society Institute, that is Soros Foundation, Eurasia Foundation, United States Agency for International Development, and volunteers we are having. And our aim is to establish active open source community in Armenia. Still it is not very active. So in our in our universities, again, commercial products are very expensive, and we are preparing a package with minimal software package, and it could be Windows XP, let's say. Later maybe we will replace it with SUSE, but I am not sure for this time. OpenOffice, Mozilla Thunderbird, Mozilla Firefox, and ISMA Translator. So this will be included there for students in the library. These computers will be mounted and they will be able to use all of them in Armenian language, in Russian, in English, whatever they will prefer. As a server, one of the servers for housing digital resources, we are planning to use Greenstone, which is already localized, and Moodle or Ilias as a distance learning platforms. Just now we are thinking which one to select. We are having a foundation, Armenian Research Educational Networking Association, which is founded by Armenian universities and research institutions. And the aim of this foundation is to do a collaborative or joint projects involving all universities of Armenia. Under the umbrella of this association, we are having two dedicated servers, one for developing digital book collections and the another for developing distance learning courses. So they are free, these servers, for university professors, academic staff, and for students. So they can upload their courses there, their digital materials, and everybody can use them. Now, what is going in our libraries? So, looking into the Stefan Salmans article, going back to the 1993s, it seems that American librarians were pioneers of open source philosophy, ideology, which is going back to mid-60s, and their suggestions are still actual. Now we are having, we can say that the suggestions made by American librarians are almost done, and we can say that we are ready to use open source library automation systems and other modules in our libraries. So in Armenia currently, as integrated library systems, we are using Aleph of Exlibris, Datatrack, IRBIS, and WinISIS system. All of them are very nice, very modest systems. We are having very large WinISIS community in Armenia. And before moving to open source ILS systems, of course we must do some testings to understand what we are selecting. And if we will change commercial products to open source, what benefits we will have, and will we go into trouble, or everything will go normally. There is a very good report prepared by Art Reino, Open Source Systems for Libraries, and he has done a good analysis of the market and a lot of suggestions. So we will try to use suggestions from the report to prepare our own suggestions for Armenia and for other developing countries. Between digital libraries and virtual learning environments, there must be a bridge, and maybe this bridge will be researcher packet, which is also open source, with modules. And in 2007, May 21-23, we are planning to hold a conference in Yerevan State University with collaboration with the German National Library of Science and Technology, Middlesex University London, and University Library of Hanover. The conference is sponsored by the European Union Tempus program, and we hope that OpenSite Institute East East project also will be a co-financer of this project. So this will allow to invite participants from Central and Eastern European countries. The topic of the conference is Education in 21st Century, Digital Libraries, Gateways to Knowledge Societies. And amongst the topics, you can see MARC formats and metadata, open source products. So you are welcome to participate in our conference. At the end of my presentation, I want to express my gratitude to AFL Consortium for financial support of my participation in the conference, and Code for Lib conference organizer for such a wonderful job. And thank you.
I have two questions. The first is the most popular commercial software in Armenia already localized? And the second question is the fact that our programming languages, configuration files, and a lot of documentation of open source software in English, is that a very significant barrier to implementation?
Answer to second question, no. For the first question, I don't know which one is the most popular commercial packet for Armenia. For libraries, you mean, or in general?
In general, like for, I presume, Office and Photoshop, but is one of the reasons people like the pirated software better is because it's already localized and nothing needs to be done with it?
Nothing is done, of course, but localization just is going in Armenia. We have just started, let's say, going back, it could have 2-3 years history because of that. All of them are using commercial products, especially they are cheap. You can other questions? No, thank you.